Welcome to our first episode of the Dublin Maker podcast. I am your host, Vicky Toomey Lee, your friendly neighbourhood maker advocate from the Dublin Maker team. Dublin Maker is an annual maker festival funded by Science Foundation Ireland. This year's Dublin Makers was postponed to next summer due to COVID-19, so we are bringing Dublin Maker to you with our podcast series this summer. This is the first episode in a series of six. Today I have Nathan Wheeler of Crafty Nathan's Creations as our special guest, and my co-host for this episode is Jeffrey Rowe from Dublin Maker Team. So Nathan, welcome to our podcast, and thank you for joining us for a chat.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Not having a Dublin Maker Festival this year is kind of weird, but here's our solution. Bring the world of our Dublin Maker community to the listeners themselves. So think of it as a virtual drop into your Maker tent. So tell me about yourself and what you do.
I guess I have been a maker, I'd say, for the past 3 years. I like to think of myself as a mixed media maker. I don't really stick to any one kind of format. I tend to kind of go with the ebbing of the tide. So one day I'm working on leather work and I'm building a leather bag. Another day I'm making posters or I'm making miniature dioramas. Some other times I'm making giant suits of armor, ray guns. I wouldn't say you could pin me down and say that I'm this kind of maker. And like, you come to my, if you were coming to my, let's say my imaginary booth at Dublin Maker, you'd be like, this is a lot of weird stuff and I don't know how it's connected, but it works. And that's kind of how I've always been. I've kind of looked at people like Adam Savage and that, and I'm like, they're not just, they classify themselves as a maker first, not as a leather worker or not as a tailor or a seamstress, but as someone who gets great joy from the act of making. And I like to think of that as very much, there's so many different ways I can do something. If I have a problem, I just have to figure out how the hell I'm supposed to get there. And if that means I have to learn how to stitch pieces of leather, or if it means I have to learn how to weld, I'm going to have to figure it out. It mightn't be beautiful, it mightn't be pretty, but I'll get there in the end. And that's the joy I get out of it. So I guess when Crafty Nathan's Creations came out, it was just kind of a visual appearance of the things that I want to make, and how I come up with my ideas is, you could write a book on that. That's just more kind of trying to figure things out as I go along, but it's pretty straightforward process. I'll see something and I'll be like, that's cool, I'm going to go try and do that. And then it's me falling towards that until I get something that looks somewhat decent.
Oh, amazing. You mentioned Adam Savage. I'm a big fan as well, especially his recent kind of videos and all this like favorite equipment and stuff. It's just general stuff and it's all like, it's not just focusing on one thing. So I understand, you know, when you say a maker could be, it's not just specialized in one particular thing. It's like a maker now can be very general. How did you actually get started in making?
I guess I come from somewhat of an artistic family. My grandfather was an art teacher. Both my parents went to art college. So I did art in secondary school and I was always somewhat arty, but I would never have considered myself the moniker of a maker. You know, that kind of came later on. So I always kind of had that background of kind of building things when I was quite young. I kind of built a couple of costumes and stuff. But during university, I was very focused on my studies. And it was only kind of after that, a couple of years after that, I was, a friend of mine said, there's a convention coming up. And I'd never been to a convention. I was like, oh, right, okay, well, we should go. And it was Dublin Comic Con was my first convention. And I was like, wow, Dublin Comic Con, that's incredible. And you're walking around, there's incredible costumes everywhere. And you're thinking, this is really, really cool. And I was thinking, you know, we're looking at the costume contest and we were sitting there, the pair of us knowing nothing about how to make anything. EVA foam was a foreign thing that we didn't understand the magic of. And we sat there and we were looking at the costumes anyway. And we're like, these are really, really good. My friend was saying, yeah, they're cracker. Like they're really, really good. And he said, think you could do one of them. And I was like, I could definitely do one of them, knowing full well that I had no idea how to do one of them. But I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a bash and I'll try and make something. So I kind of went home, and over the next couple of weeks, I was like, Jesus, I'm actually going to have to figure out how to make something. So I got the idea of making a plague doctor, which very topical now, but at the time it was, it seemed like a good idea. So I kind of had to figure out how to put all these things together. So I wanted like a plague mask, and I was, I was a bit intimidated at that point to start with leather. So I did EVA foam and I got some patterns for it. And then I needed to like make a kind of a leather apron and stuff. So I got some faux leather and I badly stitched it. I mean, you've never seen worse stitch lines than this.
Oh,
done on
you
this.
Haven't seen my stitches.
Oh, it was. This thing was like, it worked because it was like plague doctor and like you could get away with it, but it was really, looking back, it was really thrown together, but it was an incredible act of making. And I had to figure out how to do so many different things. And by the end of it, I turned my spare bedroom into this massive area where I was filled with equipment and I had like tools that I'd had to pick up and I had foam and I had glue and I had all these things. And I was like, this is great. And then I went to the convention. I don't know what convention it was. It was a couple of months after Dublin Comic Con. And I went around anyway, and I was kind of walking around in my plague doctor outfit, and people must have thought I was mad because it wasn't very relatable. And it was just like, that's a bit creepy. Because it was the whole, it was all black, and I had like this kind of I had like vials of like putrid fluid on me and everything, and I was kind of just wandering around, and people were probably like, don't get too close to that man, okay? But some people were really into it, and they were like, oh, that's really, really cool. And it was a great sense of kind of build up to the confidence, and it was like, geez, you know, that's great, like I put a lot of effort into it. And then I was thinking, you know, I'll make another one and I'll make it bigger and I'll try something completely different. And then one thing led to another, and then I started making the costumes. And then I made the Fallout one, the big red outfit that most people know. People really were into that. And then I made the Metro one, which was heavy Russian, and it was massive rail gun and everything, and people were really into that. And then, as Jeffrey knows all too well, there's a massive tech priest sitting in the middle of Tog that's definitely not taking up any space and is totally fine. And then I just started branching off into other things. So in lockdown, I can't make a costume, but I can work on different projects. So I started making some dioramas. I've been working on some yoga bags, some wallets. I've learned all these skills, and then I can go, oh, I've got all these skills now. I can actually build some of the things that I've always wanted. I don't need to buy these things. I can build something. Like something as silly as, I've got a pencil case here that I built the other day. And I was like, I need a pencil case for going back to uni. And I was like, oh, I could build that now. And it's not perfect. It's not the most fancy thing in the world, but I made it, and it's cool. And there's a great sense of kind of accomplishment for that. Jeffrey's sitting there wondering where his sewing machine is, but it's sitting here beside me in my workshop. Because I borrowed it 2 or 3 days before the lockdown happened, and it's been sitting here ever since. And I was like, oh, brilliant, I've got a sewing machine. I may learn how to sew. So I did that, and it's been really, really rewarding and kind of learning that new skill. Sewing in particular, I've been doing an awful lot of since I've been in lockdown because I don't have the space to do anything. I found that when I started sewing, I really struggled, and I think I nearly botched 2 sewing machines. Jeffrey's freaking out now thinking I've botched this one.
No,
I haven't, but it was great to chat to I don't know if you know her, Jeff, but Meg, who's joined Todd recently enough, she was really, really great. She kind of knew that I was coming at this as a complete learner, but I needed to make these big draping robes for my costume, and she was really, really good. In like 2 or 3 days, she sat me down and she helped me work through the project, and it was so good to have someone who could just explain something to you in a really simple way, because as you said, you're going too fast and all that. Sometimes it'll take you an awful longer to realize, well, what am I doing wrong? It's like when you have a 3D printer and you don't know what the hell is going on, when it could be super, super simple. But if you don't have that knowledge, it's exponentially more complicated. So I always found there's a great sense of, if you have someone who's somewhat okay at that skill and gives you even a day to just explain something to you, you can jump so many hurdles that would take if you're just trying to figure it out yourself. You can actually leapfrog an awful lot of stuff, because the basic mistakes you'd make that you're eventually need to learn from, you could just be immediately, don't do that because this will happen. And you're like, oh, I understand that now, and I won't make that mistake. And it's made, I've always found, if I'm going to start a new skill, I try and find someone. Tog's been a great one for that. It's been a great kind of resource for that, because there's so many people there that have really off the wall skills. If it's 3D printing or laser cutting, you can just grab someone, have a conversation with them, and you can kind of learn something really what seems really complicated, but you learn it and then you can actually apply that knowledge to your next project pretty seamlessly. Excuse the pun. But that's kind of been the way I've kind of found things.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to, I find it's a great way to learn myself is a lot by just jumping straight in. Personally, I've never been one for classes or tutorials. I just find I learn by just trying out and incorporating failure into this whole process.
What are your tips if things go wrong during a project? You know, I know like Jeffrey was saying, like you just go into it and just learn from the failures. So, you know, from your experience, you know,
So what
how
happens
do you
when you cut a
fix?
piece of fabric too short, or do you just adjust your design, or what, how do you sort of deal with that sort of thing?
That's a really good question. I guess the great example there is with the fabric is you cut your fabric too short. You either have two options in that situation. You adjust your design, and you start again. I tend to be a, you know, waste not want not. So I try and adjust my design for things, to try and make it work. Because even if it doesn't work out the most perfect way possible, as Jeffrey said, you're going to learn from that failure. You're going to learn generally don't cut it a bit too short again. I had the same thing with, I think Jeffrey's probably an awful lot better at this than I am, but more familiar with electronics. And my understanding of electronics is very, very basic. I make the lights go on and I can also make them flash. And half the time, that's good enough for most people. People be like, ah, he's got flashing lights. That's pretty cool. Don't need to do anything more fancy than that. But when you've got like 20 LED lights on a costume or something and you're like, ah, now I shall push the button and nothing happens. And you're like, ah. There's nothing more frustrating than just things don't come together and you have to figure it out and go back. But as Jeffrey said, you do learn from these things and you learn from your failures and you're able to kind of make a bit more progress. I still don't know what a resistor does, but sure.
So you've had plenty of great projects that I've seen on various social media platforms. I just want to ask you about your process of, or if you have any, of documentation. Do you have a particular platform you like? Have you got a notebook where you keep all your sketches? Or how do you document or record your process?
I don't, if that's honest. So what I would tend to do is I tend to get an idea of something. So we'll take, I don't know if you saw this, but the diorama I did of the Dublin Georgian streets with all the intricate lights and all that. The idea for that came because I wanted a book nook. And then I thought, well, I'm stuck in Dublin, so I may as well do something Dublin themed. So I thought book nook, Dublin themed. And then I kind of thought, I'll bodge this together. So I'd written down the rough idea that I wanted on a scrap piece of paper. I tend not to keep a running journal of what my plan is. And then I just kind of ran at it and I kind of figured it out as I went along, took a couple of pictures, had a couple of ideas of what I wanted to do, and then just kind of rolled with it. I'd like to think I have a better process for that, but it's actually definitely something I need to work on because I've had that issue in the past where, an example, the big tech priest I built. An awful lot of those ideas where I had a crazy idea, I built it, but does it really tie in with the rest of it? Not necessarily. So that's something I've always really struggled with, having an idea, but then actually planning to the end of that idea and not getting, you know, going off on a bit of a tangent halfway through and then arriving back to, oh, this is what I was doing.
Yeah, I find documenting my projects at best I can do a few photos, and at the end I might write something retrospectful, thinking, oh, this is what I had in mind. But pre-planning, yeah, it's just not me.
So for me, like I do many kind of projects. When I just started for lockdown, because I want to find something to do and a bit of content as well to show that, you know, I am doing something. So I do, like what Jeffrey said, you know, take pictures, but I also take some videos as well, because I'm also like whenever I get something working, especially electronics, because I'm not great at electronics either. So when something works, oh my God, it works, it works, it works, and I take a video saying, look, it's a proof that it does work. It's not just a picture of a light come on, it's a picture of an actual thing that's doing something that I said it would do, even as work in progress. And then I found that then I write kind of a blog post about it, and I realized that I actually go through, even though I thought like, oh, it didn't take that long, there wasn't that much work in it after all. But when I actually log it all down and write it in a post, it's actually quite a number of steps before I find the right way of doing things and things that went really wrong and how did I the thought process go be around it. And it's quite satisfactory because then you have a whole blog post of a completed project of a mini project that, you know. So I found that yes, I can do something. So I'm on to doing a next thing, which I'm really stuck on at the moment. So, but that's more of a rambling blog. So I have to summarize when I get the project working. I'll probably summarize that into a kind of blog post. So, yeah. So it is quite hard to try and document something because it's just an idea and you're not quite sure if it will work or not. Especially if you're just wandering all around and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And some of them could be just really oh, just hitting the dead end, and you're wondering like, would you like to tell people about that?
It always reminds me of what Jeffrey said there. It always reminds me of the quote. Was it Napoleon said it, or maybe misattributed to quote Napoleon? He said, "No battle plan ever survives contact with the enemy." And I always think that's very similar when you start a project. Is you have a great idea and you're like, "This is going to go perfectly right," and then you actually realize this is not going to go well at all. And then what you have at the end is often very different from what you started with. And you're like, how did I get all the way over here when I wanted to start something over there? And I find the bigger the project, the more you're getting away from what you originally thought. You know, if you have a very simple project, so like probably an example here is I made a lightsaber the other day, and it was just print lightsaber, paint lightsaber, make lightsaber go be pretty, give lightsaber to someone else. That's a project that's very hard to get away from. But if you're thinking of like massive moving parts or in you know, electronics and lots of different media, it's so easy to go, I actually have a better idea than my original idea. And then you go off on a tangent and things kind of go completely. But other times I built things, and as you said, they can be dead ends. Things just don't work. And you have to kind of go, no, that didn't work. Chuck it in the bin and then start the next thing.
Yeah, I guess a good segue to that is, and a kind of complementary topic is, how do you know a project is finished? Is it after the event you built it for? Is it when a new idea takes over your mind? How do you know something is finished?
For me personally, no project is ever finished because no project is ever perfect. Do you know what I mean? And I think if you have the capacity to think, no one has the capacity to make something perfect, that would be arrogance. But if you have the capacity to improve on something, you could put endless amounts of effort into improving that. But at the same time, there is an awful lot of truth to you can overwork something and you can put more energy into something than it's actually worth. So an off-the-wall example, I could make a suit of armor made completely out of leather, and it would be a perfect, let's say a perfect replica of something. It's going to cost me hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of euros. Now it will look cool, but is that a practical thing? And then you could polish it up and you could do this, and then you could add the next different bit, and you could go down a hole of just, is this worth it? And is there a net benefit back to me? But at the same time, it's also why are you doing a project? So for me, I like to kind of try new things. I like to kind of show other people what I'm working on. I like to just mess around. But if your goal is to make this thing a perfect replica, you could spend years perfecting it. Like people in the 501st, they spend, those guys look over screen footage of, frame by frame to see if that pauldron fits right there. And like that's a level of dedication that I just don't have. But you can work on a project endlessly. And at the same time, that project could be useless, which is difficult. It's difficult, especially if something you've poured your heart, sweat, and tears into and you're really worked on. That can be a very difficult thing to do. And I can understand why so many people are reluctant to do it, me included.
Yeah.
For people who are getting into it, do you have any kind of recommendations or resources that are handy to know? Like, say we're getting into cosplay is cost making costumes and cosplay is a very big part of what you do. Like, if people are getting into it, like, where would you go and buy stuff? Like, say online, or what kind of online communities or communities that people can start off with and chat to, and because if they have an idea, saying, oh, I want to make that, whatever video game characters they're into, or anime, or kind of cartoon characters, and they say, oh, I want to, I can wear that costume. Maybe coming up to Halloween may not be a convention, it could be a Halloween costume. And so, do you have any kind of advice?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I guess I've always viewed cosplay as the ultimate of mixed media, because if you take an average costume, there's so many different parts on most things. Like if you take, let's say, the Mandalorian, there's leather work on that, there's metal work, there's polishing, there's fabric work, there's 3D printing work. There's so many different skills that you need to make that work. You're going to need to learn an awful lot of things. And I found with cosplay, there is, how does it, there is a gradient. Everyone should be able to make anything that they want. And I'm a firm believer of that. I don't believe in giving people stick for, oh, that's not perfect, or you could have done this better. I tend not to believe that. I'm judgmental of myself enough. I don't want to be judgmental of other people and what they do. So if you're starting, the best thing to do is to just start, is to just give it a bash. EVA foam is the industry favorite, followed by Warbler, bit of fabric work. And there's so many different parts of the community that people fit into. So I find that you're going to have some cosplayers, probably more myself, who kind of fit into armor builds. So their builds tend to be quite armored, hard plates, very metallic, and that tends to be the way we're going. There's the other side of the spectrum, and you see this at any con, that go for the much more fabric side. So people who are into manga and anime, and they're, I don't know much about it myself, but they're very, very strong fabric, or fabric, they're into fabric and they sew and all that kind of stuff, which is completely different to generally what I do. And then you've got people who are kind of middle of the road, where they can kind of move between those two. And you've got the obviously the higher end, where people are doing like really incredible stuff, the international cosplayers. And then you have me, 2 years ago, who's just starting out, who has a pretty weird plague doctor outfit that looks a bit scary. So when you're starting out, you just gotta kind of go for it. Try the simple stuff first. So start with EVA foam, figure that out, and then slowly work your way into it. Because the reality of it is although cosplay is somewhat accessible, EVA foam is not that expensive. Glue is not that expensive. As you kind of get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you take on more of the different parts, and you try and do them in a more faithful way. So, if you did all the armored bits of the Mandalorian in EVA foam, that's grand. It's great. If you want to do the next stage and then do all the leather pieces, you need a huge amount more tools, and the amount of information grows exponentially. And then if you want to do 3D print of the blaster, you need an awful lot more tools. So it tends to be is stick to one medium at the start. Generally EVA foam or fabric. Start with one of those two and then work from there, because the amount of tools you'll need, it grows exponentially. Now I'm quite lucky. I've built my own little shop here. I've got my 3D printers back here. I've got my wall of tools up here. I've got my paints, and I've kind of collected things as I need them. But when you're starting into it, that can be quite intimidating. So I've always found start small, start with EVA foam, make something that looks cool, learn from it, and then go, oh, that's deadly. Now what I'll do next is I'll do this, and I'll add this little bit into it, and I'll do more fabric work. And your amount of skills and your expertise in it and your knowledge grows, as you build and as you take on more complex projects. And that's what it's really all about. Like, all I want to see in the community is more cool costumes. And get talking to people who make cool things, and that's all there should be. Is there people out there who are a bit weird about things? Yes. Don't ignore those people. Those people are not the people you want to be chatting to. The cosplay community in Ireland is quite good, and they're quite supportive, so it's pretty open, in my opinion.
We'll kind of wrap this up.
So Nathan, one more thing, sorry, but before we let you go, can you let us know where our listeners can find your stuff?
Yeah, of course. You can catch me on Instagram at Crafty Nathan's Creations. I kind of post everything I have there on my Instagram channel. I have a Twitter as well, but generally go to my Instagram. I have most of my stuff there, and I'm going to be kicking off a bigger YouTube channel, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. A bit of a camera equipment arriving, and I'm going to be doing more in-depth tutorials to kind of, as you said, like it sounds an awful lot easier, but when you kind of see the process, these things can make an awful lot more sense. So stay tuned for that, but you can catch me on Instagram anytime, and I post there at least once or twice a week.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks again, Nathan, for coming aboard and speaking with us. And yeah,
No worries. Thanks, sir, for having me.
check out Crafty Nathan's Creations on Instagram. And thanks, Jeffrey, for co-hosting our first episode. Remember to hit subscribe to our podcast. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Take care, stay safe, and this is Vicky signing off from the Dublin Maker podcast.